Welcome to the Emotions and Money podcast, where we unpack the psychology behind our investment decisions and why our emotions could be sabotaging our financial outcomes. I'm your host, Maya Fisher-French, and I'm joined by Paul Nixon, who's the head of behavioral finance at Momentum Investments. We're going to explain why, when it comes to investing, understanding your money emotion is as important as understanding the investment itself. Over the last five episodes, we've been making the case that our personality and even our biology affect our financial decisions and the way we perceive money. But now, Paul, you, in conjunction with Pretoria University, have actually put together a very interesting assessment, which give advisors, I think it's aimed at advisors. They're going to give the advisors the ability to diagnose their client's personality and then have obviously a much more personal discussion about their financial behavior. And Paul, I must tell you, you know, you gave it to me to do. It's called Your Money Fingerprint. It was so accurate. It was fascinating. And Paul even gave me tips about my money. He did tell me to spend more, I think, or something. He told me. That's all I read. That's all I read. That's the only part I remember. But Paul, just unpack what does this money fingerprint do? How does it pull together everything we've been discussing in the last five podcasts?
Yeah, so I mean, it's trying to incorporate or give the advisors a systematic way of including that risk discussion that we talked about, what kinds of risk you should be thinking about. But how do you combine that with someone's cash flow management, their daily cash flow management, which comes from the money attitude? So, money attitudes, and then finally the personality dimensions as well. So look, it is really more of a, I would say, a compass than a GPS. So it really provides sort of fertile ground to start having discussions about, about money. But if you look at the nub of it, I mean, it really is about sort of two things. It's about being present orientated and impulsive versus future orientated and in that way, goal orientated. And that's really, I mean, that's the basic of it. And if you think about it, that's really the crux of financial behavior.
And that's why some people find it a lot easier to save and invest, because they are more future orientated, goal orientated, which was my personality type. And there are people who are more present and impulsive, which was, funny enough, more your personality type. And I found this absolutely fascinating. And also how there things balance themselves out. So there is also moderation. So sometimes your money attitude and your personality can actually balance each other out, and even your risk tolerance. But one thing we haven't really unpacked, so we've unpacked risk attitudes, we've unpacked your personality, which was ocean. Let's maybe spend a little bit of time on money attitudes and really unpacking those and then explaining our behavior and how that results. How that affects our financial decisions.
So if we look at money attitudes, and again, this depends. There's many different ways to view this, but the three lenses that we've used to assess money attitudes are whether someone is very expressive with money. So we call that money prestige. So there are people out there who like to influence other people with money, and they also like to they like to demonstrate their wealth, for example. So that way, so there's I think it was a Morgan Housel example, but there's a very big difference between being rich and being wealthy. In actual fact, they're the opposite ends of the scale, right? So rich is the stuff you can see. Wealth is the stuff you can't see. It's the stuff that's sitting in investments and all those kind of things. But there are people out there who are very expressive with their money. That also lends itself, again, we've spoken about that inclination towards investing in very, very high moving assets like crypto, for example, and attributing that skill to, attributing that result rather, or the outcome to skill, as opposed to, that sort of awareness that it's probably mostly luck. It's not necessarily a bad thing to be expressive with money, but again, it's an awareness thing, right? So there's no, if you look at the measurement scales of these things, you can't say that, anything high or low is bad or good. I mean, it's an awareness thing. So you need to understand. I mean, I've given the example of my own behavior as well, because I come out as more money expressive. I do like investing in high risk assets, but I also liked to always, I mean, I gave the example of, buying a nice car because of the fact that I had a bad childhood experience with people laughing at my parents rocking up at school in a very old, beaten up car. So there are, it's an awareness and understanding thing. And there's nothing wrong with buying expensive cars if you can afford them. But if you're buying an expensive car to get someone else's respect, then you're buying it for the wrong reason. And that's the important thing, right? So there's nothing wrong with wanting to buy a Ferrari or owning a, luxury cars. Just make sure that what you're getting, what you're paying for, if that makes sense.
And I think it's important just to run that filter over all the time and saying, what is driving this need to have this? Where is this coming from? And just an awareness. And you spoke also about being an extrovert, and how that. And you're an extrovert. You have money prestige, and so a lot of those often come together. So on the money, the personality traits, yours would be you'd be tinged more with extrovert. So it's just aware, saying, that's who I am. I'm extroverting. I like to be with people. I enjoy the, looking good, having the car. There's nothing wrong with that. I mean, I'm sadly the opposite. I like seeing my investment balances, right? I'm a complete nerd, which I understand as an issue. One has to I've got to keep reminding myself that it's also okay to spend and that it's also okay to buy the nice things and not panic too much about that balance in the investments. But it is harder for someone who's got money, prestige, extrovert, to save and invest. So what do you do to counter that?
Yeah, so I mean, again, it's the awareness, and it also doesn't matter. Even if you have very good money behavior, it doesn't mean you'll keep doing that, right? So even if you're generally speaking very future orientated and very conscientious, for example, it doesn't mean that you can just ignore everything, because it just means that you're probably slightly better wired, in terms of money behavior, but you've still got to reinforce that. So don't, the biggest mistake we can make is assuming that people who are like that don't need help. We all need help, right? Because there are things in the moment that are going to, again, when we have our when we have this kind of dopamine, or we have these emotions, we have these things flowing through our system that make us feel a certain way, that, might make us behave differently. But I think, sort of coming back to your question, I think it's what you can do is, in the self-awareness process, is then start developing, so Greg Davies from Oxford Risky calls them decision prosthetics. So it's almost just things like tips, tricks, hacks to help us make better decisions in the moment. So for example, I mean, if I look at myself and my wife, I mean, I'm more impulsive and I'm more present orientated. So I love to travel, right? So I'm very, very happy to spend a lot of money on traveling because it's experience related. But my wife, for example, she's a little bit the opposite. So she tends to think about the future a bit more, and it creates stress for her to spend money on traveling, although she enjoys it as well. So what we do is, we have a spending council. So, if there's any big ticket items that need to be, money needs to be spent on, we have to both agree on them. So we have to sort of even do a little PowerPoint presentation. That's happened before, by the way. So I'm a total nerd as well. But even sort of doing making a really strong case for why you think something is important and getting your partner to buy in. Of course, it's never as simple, though. There's no one rule that fits or works for everyone, because some couples, if you have someone who's a counterbalance to you, there's always going to be a power dynamic in every relationship, right? So sometimes your partner's going to enable you, and sometimes they're going to, they're going to disable you, right? So what you need to understand as well, that, in anything that you do, the decisions that you take, in things like being present orientated or future orientated, that you have obviously some kind of agreement as a couple, and that you can at least buy into the relationship, because otherwise it creates stress. So I've got a very good friend of mine who's in exactly the same situation on the reverse side. So, his kids and his wife go overseas, I mean, that cocktail's like €20, and all he sees is basically he's doing a running total of the balance, where everyone
he's
else
multiplying
is having
it by 20
exactly,
every
everyone
time.
Everyone else is having a rip-roaring time, and that's a different experience, right? Mm. So some people are having a great time, the other person's not having a great time. So that's going to create stress and conflict and things, other things which might come out. So one thing, for example, that I use is a spending council. The other thing is, I love to always have the newest gadgets and tech. But I've made a rule to myself that I need to create a pain of paying, right? So if I buy a new iPhone, it has to be cash. So I don't take cell phone contracts, or at least I don't, the data it makes sense to have on a contract, but to actually finance the handset doesn't make sense.
It doesn't, right? And you get such good deals on Takealot. Yeah. I've been there, I buy my exactly. handsets for cash, yeah.
So, create a pain of paying. So when you actually have to take money out of your pocket and pay for the handset in cash, it might impact or influence the decision that you make. Don't put a residual on a car, those kind of things as well, because it probably means that if that's the only way you can afford it, it means that you can't afford it. So create a pain of paying as well if you can. Those are two of the tricks, the tips and tricks that I'd use. Yeah.
I was listening to you thinking, sometimes you get a couple that are both the same personality type. Yeah. And then things can get quite out of hand quite quickly. Or you may be single. And I think in those circumstances, having an accountability partner outside of your relationships, for example, and that would be a financial advisor. Yeah. And I think, or you've just got a friend who's really, I'm one of those people with a lot of my family. They run things past me. They never listen to me, but they do run it past me.
You also have that, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So then you've got money prudence. What is money prudence?
So the money prudence. So the the money prestige thing gives a good indication of whether you're using or whether you don't mind using money to influence people. If you think about it, if you create a status around money, you're also going to be remember, money is a shortcut, right? So you can have the money now because you can finance things, you can take residuals, so you can show people that you have money without actually having money. It's that's quite easy, right? So that's the kind of expressive part of money. Again, low or high is not necessarily good or bad, just understand a little bit about yourself. On the prudence side, though, we move towards the present versus future orientation. So if you have a high money prudence, for example, you think a lot about the future. If you have a low money prudence, you think a lot about the now, which is where the impulsivity comes in. So again, it's not necessarily bad to be high or low, but you've got to remember that there are consequences for being on either side of that scale. From a pure money behavior point of view, you'd want to be future orientated. But the last one, of course, then it could create stress, which is money anxiety.
You find people who are strong on money prudence often have money anxiety?
Or it could create money anxiety.
It could create money anxiety.
So sometimes what happens is you're overly focused on the future because not having money creates a lot of stress. I keep on referring, it's such a good book, but Morgan Housel talks about the gas station attendant in his book as well. It's someone who was a gas station attendant in America and saved himself rich, wealthy, actually not rich. This person ended up with $8 million in their bank account, which they then left to charity. And so you could argue then, was that the best way to, did that create the most amount of utility for that person? Perhaps did. Maybe going to sleep with that sort of money in the bank was the secret. But you might say, actually life is a little bit more about experiencing as well. So would you rather die with $8 million in the bank or die with $2 million in the bank, but having seen 20 different countries, so that's where the money anxiety can create good and bad outcomes.
Well, I'm thinking of your friend who freaks out at the cocktails. Exactly. And so me too. I was in India earlier this month, and I'm more on the money prudence anxiety side, so I get a bit anxious when I'm spending money overseas. And the cocktails and the alcohol, they were really, really, really expensive, And eventually on the last night, I thought, no, we were at a lovely club and I thought, no, that's it. I'm going to have a... But I can tell you, I did the maths and it still freaked me out. But I did try and overcome. And I think that is... And I know when you did my money profile, you gave me some really good tips as well as to how to improve my money attitudes. And one of those was, you said, with money anxieties, obviously. And so anyone who has money anxiety must have an emergency fund. And that emergency fund may need to be bigger than other people's emergency funds. Yeah. And I always think of Dave Ramsey. I don't know if you've read of his stuff. He wrote The Total Money Makeover. And he talks about an emergency fund switches off that awful, horrible, churning in the stomach and that anxiety and the throbbing in the neck and the anxiety and all the rest of it. It's your heart attack plan. And I think we mentioned even an emergency fund in the last podcast. For me, it's like, and maybe that's again, I write about emergency funds so often. I'm thinking maybe that's my money anxiety, but I think it's a good underpin for anyone.
Yeah, for sure. I think there's so many of these things could help or hinder, financial behavior and how the way you feel about financial behavior as well. So, a lot of the times it's about the utility, as I've mentioned, is coming from the way you feel in between these things, right? So it's when you buy these, some people who buy these will make these impulsive decisions, then you don't feel great afterwards. So you're not getting the actual benefit that you thought you were going to get from the purchases. So I think the money attitudes piece of the puzzle just really gives a good idea of people's day-to-day cash flow management, what their natural predispositions are with regards to their money. Interestingly as well, there was some interesting research as well showing that people who are very expressive with money are quite likely to keep money secrets as well. So because money is so important to them, they don't, they often are the ones with kind of doing stuff on the side, having businesses on the side that are not sort of disclosed in the family finances. So again, if these things are going to be so important to you, it's all about an awareness. There's no good or bad, but there's, for a financial advisor, it provides fertile ground to explore things a little bit more. Mm. And I think that's the true value to this is exploring. And then very importantly, contrasting these things in a couple, because they're going to be things that might be different. You might be able to very, very quickly identify a source of conflict in the relationship because of money. And money is a very emotive topic. So it often causes a lot of conflict.
And, you know, Paula, I always think it's useful to do to have a conversation about growing up. What was money to you growing up? And, I mean, you spoke about the car, the car example. I was 16 when my father died and we were left financially destitute. I don't know where my money anxiety could possibly come from, you know. So we just need to reflect back and saying this is where it comes from. Understand it. Share that information with our partner or find an accountability partner. And I also just liked your idea of so for somebody who who's expressive with money and likes to around money prestige needs to just make sure that they have, you know, they have a counterbalance to that and they've got a financial plan and they're not spending more than they earn. But the person who perhaps feels guilty always spending money needs to have a guilty fund.
Exactly.
Money that you put in and you say, which is exactly, by the way, what I did do. I had a card. I used a payment, a Forex card that I had, and I put the money on there. And I thought, that money is for me to spend on clothes and what I wanted to buy. that's what it was there for. And I think it is, again, around having a plan and just planning around these things. Maybe that's the bottom line. Have a plan.
For sure, absolutely. Because if you've got a plan, I mean, you can then identify, and also the stuff is guilt-free. You know, if you're going to buy the, you don't have to. If you want to buy a Patek Philippe watch or kind of goodness, whatever these expensive things are, that's fine because it's part of the plan. And if you want to, if that makes you feel good, that's fine. Just make sure that you're getting the utility from the right place, and more importantly, that it's not going to affect your long-term financial security. Yeah.
I have to end off with one last anecdote. You reminded me of a friend of mine who had a spending thing. And whenever she saw me, she felt guilty because she had a new handbag. And she was like the 40,000 rand handbag, you know, and the 40,000 and the whatever 10,000 rand shoes and all the rest of it. And she said, Maya, you're going to be so proud of me. I've stopped spending. I've paid off all my credit card debt. I've closed all my store cards because I'm saving and investing for a Porsche. And I said, fantastic. At least it's goal oriented. So there you are. Absolutely. It doesn't matter as long as you're saving, investing towards the goal. So I think that's a great summary and a great way to end off. And Paul, thank you once again. I've had an absolute, this has been so fascinating for me. And I hope our listeners have gained a lot of insight into their own personalities.
Yeah, thanks so much, Maya. Yeah, look forward to the next series.